On this episode of Off Course Agility, my guests are Pat and Tom Maloney Harmon. Over the years that I've attended agility trials, I've realized it's not that common to meet a couple that does agility together with their dogs. One such NADAC couple that I'm aware of is Pat and Tom Maloney Harmon. My guest today, my guests today on Off Course Agility are Pat and Tom Maloney Harmon. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi.
Hi there.
And dog.
And Blob. She wants to be part of this.
That's perfectly fine. It's an agility podcast, so dogs can be a part of it.
All right.
Unavoidable.
Yeah. Unless mine gets going, that would be a little bit too much. I don't know. Have you listened to my podcasts?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I've listened to a few of them. They're really interesting. I really like them a lot.
Okay. Thank you. I just asked because I normally do start with, how did you start in agility? So I'd like to ask both of you how you started in agility.
Okay.
All right. So I was the first between us, and give you just a little bit of backstory. So we always liked having shelties. A friend of ours, and actually the lady that turned out to be Pat's maid of honor at our wedding, had a Sheltie that we just thought was the most brilliant dog ever, a dog by the name of Desi. And so we had gotten a Sheltie after we'd gotten married and bought our house, this is in 1985, we'd gotten a Sheltie by the name of Katie, and we kind of were normal dog owning people, which means we knew about as much as most regular people you see on the street with a dog. But we had taken her to obedience training, and
it was a place in Lutherville.
Place up in Lutherville. I can't remember exactly who sponsored it, but so she passed away in 1998, and we decided to get another Sheltie. Went to a local breeder. And of course, you decide, well, you know, we need to do the obedience thing again. It was the right thing to do. And we couldn't go to the place again in Lutherville. They didn't have classes. So somebody steered us to Kinderpup down in Glen Burnie, Maryland. And Pasadena, Maryland. And we took her through a couple levels of basic obedience. And at the end of, I think it was intermediate obedience, at the end of the class, our instructor, Debbie Hutchinson, basically was saying, you know, what issues are you working on? And we said, well, you know, Maddie's done very well. She was a good, that was her name, Maddie, the new Sheltie. And she had done very well, but she was very fearful little dog. I mean, when strangers would approach her on the street, she would sit there and shiver and raise one little paw. It was really, really quite pathetic. And Debbie Hutchinson was the name of our obedience instructor. She says, well, I'm starting an agility class, and you might want to try that. It might give her some more confidence. And so that was it. That's how we started, was me with Maddie in 1998, and not, you know, starting this agility class. And my God, in the class we had Paula Goss with Tori, mm-hmm. and Lee Carr with her Mouse and Luke, the Mal, and Cindy Knowlton.
Luke was a Catahoula.
Oh, there you go. And then Cindy Knowlton with her turf. So, yeah, these were all experienced dog trainers and dog handlers. And then there we were with little Maddie, little 9.5-pound Shetland Sheepdog female. That's how I started, and then I'll turn it over to Pat.
So anyway, we when we first started, Tom and I were switching off from week to week in class. So one week he would run her, following week I would run her, and then he'd go back to running her. And then finally Debbie said to us, I think you guys need to decide who's going to be the primary handler for Maddie. So Tom and I talked about it, and he really wanted to do it. So I was like, okay. And but then watching him train, I was like, this is so much fun. I want to get a dog, too, and train my own dog in agility. So I ended up, that's how we ended up with Asia. I got her from a breeder in New York and picked her up and brought her home. And then that's how I got started in it, too. So then, you know, we were both taking class and training and trialing and doing all the fun things that you get to do in agility.
Yep.
Okay. That's interesting how you got going. And I'm just going to bring this up now because we're still getting going on this. Part of the reason I'm having both of you on is because Margaret McGeown, who listens to my show and has been a guest on it, she said you should have a topic of couples that do agility together. And when I think of people that I see at trials, you know, now, of course, you are in my local area. I see you in the zone. We overlap in that area in the zone trials in South Jersey. So I see you both down there. I think of people that I see at trials who are like a couple, and there's not that many. It's pretty rare. Like up here, there's Pat and Carol Daggett, but a lot of times one of them will be judging local trials, so it's not quite the same. So when I think of a couple that does agility, I do think of you two because you both are at the trial, and you generally are both trialing with your dogs. You know, each one of you.
Mm-hmm.
So that pretty much sounds like you pretty much started doing that right from the beginning, because you got a dog, Pat, you got a dog because you enjoyed watching Tom with Maddie.
Yeah. That really is pretty much, you know, how I got into it, was just watching him and looking at the fact that they were having so much fun, and I thought, I want to have that same fun.
Yeah.
So that's really, we've pretty much, you know, we've done it as a couple pretty much from the very beginning.
Yeah.
Right.
And I've always felt very fortunate that it's worked out that way, because I think, you know, what we found is that, you know, you go to a lot of trials, you're training during the week, you're going to class during the week. So it's a pretty big time commitment. And, you know, I think for a couple that maybe only one person does it, it's, you're taking a lot of time away from your spouse. And I'm very grateful that we, you know, we spend that time together.
Yeah.
Right. You both enjoy it and you have it in common. So it's something that you are able to do together.
Right. And like you said, it seems rather rare. So, you know, I do feel lucky that we have found this as a mutual thing that we love doing.
Right. Now, I'll ask, because I know you've been doing it, Earl, based on what you're saying, by date-wise, you've been doing agility a lot longer than I have, if you started in the 90s. Now, I just lost my train of thought a bit. What venues have you done, and what venues do you do? Because I know you from NADAC, but I don't know if you do other ones.
Right.
Yeah, so we started with Pawsdad. That was Debbie's club or team, and that's oriented to NADAC. And we didn't know anything about it. We just said, "Well, okay, well, if that's what Pawsdad does, then that's what we'll do. We'll do NADAC. We'll learn those skills and abilities and so forth." And I got interested in, especially with Maddie, I got interested in USDAA, and that. offered some different types of challenges that I didn't see in NADAC. And they offered, you know, at the time we were doing NADAC trials, and there were four runs a day in a NADAC trial. And an AKC trial, there was only two runs a day. So we did a little bit of AKC, but back then, it was only two runs a day, right? Standard and jumpers. That wasn't enough fun for me to devote a weekend to an AKC event. So, but a USDA trial, you could see like seven runs a day, and they might have the tournament classes, you know, team and steeplechase and Grand Prix if they were doing those events. So there was, like I said, that became my second venue with Maddie, and she did quite well at USDA. She got her adch. She got a tournament silver level. We went to the championships, the Grand Prix championships in 2003, and again in 2004. In 2004, she ran in the finals, both in Grand Prix and in steeplechase. So I was really proud of that. I was able to showcase her in two different events. I mean, that was a lot of fun. With Asia, I think you did some USDA.
Yeah, I did a couple USDA trials. Asia was a challenging dog, so I was still working on, you know, getting her to get around the course, period. So I never really did a lot of the other venues. I pretty much stayed focused on NADAC because that was what I knew the best. So when as I was trying to work through my issues with Asia, it seemed to me to make sense to stick with something
right
that I knew the best.
And the funny thing was, so we would actually split up a little bit. I would go do USDA trials, and I was actually kind of following Paula Goss's lead. She was campaigning her dogs in USDA. And we showed up at enough trials that people started thinking that we were a married couple. So she was, Paula Goss was my USDA wife for a while.
Yep.
Oh, that's funny.
that was funny.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've done USDAA and you've done NADAC. Do you still do USDAA, or are you mostly? I think of you still now as mostly NADAC.
Yeah, we're pretty much exclusively NADAC.
You know, before COVID happened, there are so many NADAC trials that were, you know, easy for us to get to. So, you know, we've always tended to do those, and I mean, I think there were still, like, USDAA trials that were close, but sometimes it seemed like they conflicted with the NADAC trials, so we would go ahead and do the NADAC trials.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And you didn't mention it, and sometimes I ask people, but I really didn't do it. I know you're in Maryland. Whereabouts in Maryland are you?
We're right in downtown Baltimore.
We're about a mile north of downtown, but yeah, we live in the city. We live in a row home. Our backyard is 18 feet wide and 30 feet long, so there's not a single piece of agility equipment.
Well, that's not totally true.
That's true.
We have used a little board to train contact.
There it is.
And we can do six weaves. When we were really when we were prepping Bluff, when Tom was prepping Bluff to go to championships, and she'd like to pop out of the weeds, we were able to get, if we opened up the back gate and went out and, you know, kind of extended out into the alley, then he could do 12 weeds with her.
We did weeds for breakfast.
Okay, so you guys really live in Baltimore proper. Wow. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we park on the street, and we hear sirens out the window and all that stuff.
All right, a city environment. Yeah, I'm amazed. So I guess the only time you really do agility with, like, a big course would be at wherever you train.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, we're really lucky because we have access to where we train, and, you know, we can do it outside or, you know, if the weather's bad or the ground's kind of wet or frozen, we can also work out of the indoor facility, which is a small, you know, a small area, but it certainly allows for, you know, training sequences and things like that.
If you're creative, you can really set up some challenging stuff in a small space.
Right. And now I know that Maryland area is, and you mentioned it, is very big with NADAC. What are some of the clubs down there that run the NADAC trials?
It's called CIA, Canines in Action is one. Lisa Schmidt comes and does some trials. So there's ITZ trials in Maryland.
There's some in Maryland or Southern New Jersey.
Yeah. There's BADS, Breakaway Action Dogs. There's Artful Dodgers.
Artful Dodgers. Paraland out
of. Oh, Perryland. Yeah, there's Perryland. They do a lot of trials. Perryland does quite a few number of trials.
Along with PAWS, of course.
Yeah.
That's our
and PAWS, yes. There's PAWS.
That's the home team.
Right. Are you still with the PAWS group?
We still train with Debbie. We train once a week. It's interesting. The training is not exclusively all of the trials or NADAC trials. Debbie teaches a wide range of things. I would say it's almost a hybrid of NADAC and UKC, believe it or not.
UKI.
Yeah. Some of the interesting, you know, backside moves and all these moves that have these weird names that I forget. But anyhow, we actually work those as well as just your standard NADAC run flat out at a great distance.
And then we also, when they're offered, we take seminars with Paula Goss.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're lucky to have really good, you know, we have really good information from two excellent instructors.
Yeah, I mean, I would overemphasize that. I mean, we're the product of, you know, to the extent that we've had success in the venue, laid on the feet of, you know, we've been lucky with the dogs we've gotten, and we're absolutely lucky that we fell into a really good training environment.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. And I understand that. And I do know when I've seen you at trials, I don't know your current pack for sure, but I know at times I've seen like up to maybe even more. Like if I remember right, you guys used to have those little like dog tents that are really small that your Shelties fit into real nice. And I would see like four of them lined up in a row, I think. So what is your current pack of dogs?
Okay, so our current pack is Beckham. Now, Beckham's pretty much retired. He's 13 and a half now. And then we have Tom has Bluff.
He's six.
And she's six. And then I have Kibo, who's four.
Okay.
And these are all Shelties. We stayed with what we think we know.
So you've always had the Shetland sheepdogs. Have you ever had, at any point in your lives, have you ever had any other type of dogs, or has it always been Shetlands?
In fact, when I was growing up as a kid in Southern California, that's where I grew up, and we had our first dog was, I think the dog's name was Pudgy, and I think it was some kind of Sheltie. It might have been a mix.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, that's between us, that's all we ever had. And we started with Katie way back in 1985, mm-hmm. I think, is when we got her. So, yeah.
Now, Tom, in between Maddie, or really at the same time as Maddie, and for a little while he overlapped Bluff, too, he had Piper.
Right.
Right, okay. Right, and I do remember... I remember seeing Maddie, I believe, run in. I do remember Piper too, yeah, and Asia also. I remember.
Yeah.
I think maybe I don't know the first year I went down to In the Zone, but I do remember. You know, that was mid 2000s somewhere, and I do remember some of the dogs you've mentioned, and all your dogs have always impressed me. You guys are very. You have good runs with your Shelties. They're always nice to watch you guys run.
That's very kind.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'll ask about Champs, because I know you have attended Champs, because I've seen you both there. So how many, let's ask, when was your first time that you went to NADAC Champs?
I think we went in 2000.
I think you're right, when you went with Maddie and pre-elite.
Yes.
They had pre-elite and elite back then.
Right. And she had qualified for whatever the qualifications were. They change over the years. But yeah, she had qualified, and I took Maddie in pre-elite. And so we had Maddie in Asia at the time. And it's really funny because after the competition, they debuted tunnelers.
But that, I don't think that was in 2000. I think that was a couple years later.
Was it a year later? Yeah, you're right. Asia may not have been. But anyhow, it was one of the championships where they debuted. And Asia was one of the first dogs ever to run tunnelers. But that was just debuted as a demo. But yeah, Maddie went as a pre-elite 12-inch dog in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in Mankato, Minnesota.
Yep, Mankato.
Wow, okay. And then how many have you pretty much gone to Champs ever since, when it's more on the East Coast? Or have you ever, how many have you gone to that you remember?
Oh, my gosh.
It'd be hard to remember. I know for a while, once we start, like when we went in 2000, and then we went on a roll, and we were going every year.
Mm.
Skipped it when it was in Colorado.
Right.
And, but we went to, so, you know, we went when the, at the time the East Coast was, it seemed to be Minnesota, because there were a number of times that it was in Minnesota. So we went to those, and then we went, it was one year in, Calgary, Alberta, and we went to those.
Yeah.
And we had to, that was nerve wracking, because we had to fly Asia. Well, we flew both of them, but Asia couldn't be in the cab, and Maddie could because she was small enough.
Right.
And we went to Gillette. We drove out to Gillette, I think, three times.
Yeah.
And then I guess when it started being held, there were a couple times it was held in Utah, and we ended up not going those years. So we've been to, I don't remember the exact number, but we've been lucky enough to go to quite a few of them.
Yeah. And then I did the Grand Prix Championships in 2000 with Maddie in 2003.
That was you.
USDA. Yeah, those were all NADAC championships. And we did the USDA in 03 and 04. And I remember I actually flew her around. It was very, very hard to find. I was struggling to get her qualified in steeplechase. So I actually flew her to a few places. I flew her out to Detroit once, and I flew her to Dallas one time, and somewhere along the line, we finally got that the steeplechase qualifier she needed to run the steeplechase. But she was being 9.5 pounds. She could fit. I put her in a Sherpa bag and put her under the seat in front of me, and she was quiet as a church mouse. So she was a good traveler.
That is something I have never done, is never flown with any type of dog. I guess it scares me a bit, but so I would always be a driving type person, I would imagine.
Well, when I had, you know, like I said, when I had to fly Asia, I was a nervous wreck. So I had Asia write a letter to the pilot and tell the pilot that she knew that going to do a really good job and take good care of her, but please understand that her mother and father were a wreck, and they weren't really crazy. And so I gave it to the flight attendant when we got on board. And the nice thing about it was, because they were worried I might be crazy, they would always tell me, before we took off, they would come to me and say, you know, your dog's on board, everything's good. And it was funny because I could, when we landed, I could actually see, I would go look out the window and I could see them, you know, bringing Asia's crate out. So that one time I did fly her, it really was a good experience. Not that I'd want to do that all the time, but it worked out well that time.
Right.
there was the one year that we were going to fly, and I can't remember what the arrangements were, but it was after 9/11. So that was in,
oh right,
yeah, and nobody could fly, so we wound up doing a driving trip. I think Debbie Hutchinson and I took her minivan and four dogs.
Karen Koenig,
you're right. It was Karen Koenig. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, Karen Koenig and four dogs. Some of them were supposed to go by plane, but we wound up driving. Turned out to be a great road trip, but totally unexpected. Things were happening back then.
Right, yeah. Well, I will admit, I think it is a little easier with smaller dogs to probably travel by air. But that's just...
This is true. Actually, in general, I mean, we have a minivan. We travel around in a minivan. We're on our second dog minivan. There are no middle seats, and the back seats folded down, so it's strictly a two-seater. But we have, a riser. And at one time, we actually had four crates in there. Although Maddie was so small, we used to tell people we only had 3.5 dogs. But we could get four shelties in crates inside the minivan, along with our luggage and our tent and, all the other stuff that you have to take to be at a trial.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do remember Maddie. I remember there was a time down there in Woodstown, it was blowing so hard that it was scary for the little dogs when they would go over the dog walk, because I think the trial might have gotten stopped for a little while because it was too windy.
Yeah,
we sort of have to really be careful about that if it was windy, like whether to run or not.
Yeah, we wound up doing a lot of course inventions down there where we would, we'd get approval to pull the dog walk because it was too scary to run. You know, Maddie is a 10-pound dog with 20 pounds of spinnaker because she had that huge coat. And if a gust of wind caught her, she would go flying. And I'm not proud of this. Early on, and way back when we first started trialing, I'd had her blown off the dog walk.
Wow.
And you would think it would traumatize her, but she was made of spring steel. She was like, no, I'll get right back on it. I'm not afraid of anything. So I guess Debbie's plan to build some confidence for dog work, because there was no way in the world this dog should ever have been that fearless, but she was. She was in regular life, she was just a cute little fluffy dog, but on the agility course, she was a lion.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now you said something that raised a question in my mind, because you have both been doing NADAC agility for a lot longer than I've been around with it. You said something about initial debut of tunnelers. What, when you first started in NADAC, what were the classes in NADAC at the time? Do you remember?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So there was regular, jumpers. There was gamblers. It was called gamblers, but it was very different than the gamblers.
Yeah, different chances.
Yes, that you see now. And
that was it. There were two rounds of regular.
Oh, that's right. Two rounds of regular, and there was jumpers and gamblers.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's always been kind of a curiosity to me about like the natch, where the natch is really just, to get a natch, you can really just do regular jumpers and chances, which I guess chances replace gamblers.
Right.
Yeah.
And those were the kind of the three courses that existed at the start. And then do you remember and recall when like Weavers and Tunnelers and Touch and Go, those guys came along?
I'm trying to remember, because those three came along at the same time. Maybe
like
in
2005, around then.
I think it was even before then.
Maybe
it was like in the early 2000s,
okay.
I think.
Yeah. And there were the three. So there were it was Tunnelers, Weavers, and Touch and Go.
Right.
And they were all, at the time, so Weavers has gone through a few permutations. And I'm not even going to mention the original Weavers, which was just a line of 60 weaves or something like that. But the original Weavers was two long sets and two short sets, all level. So even if you were a novice weaver, you had to do a lot of weaving.
Wow.
Too long, too short. Yeah, and I think eventually they get feedback, they see what's happening, and they respond appropriately. And the current version where they basically reduce the size so that a novice, you're only facing three short sets, and then it grows from there. But the current incantation is much easier on the dogs.
Right, right.
Yeah, I would
and
say
you know,
so.
I said that the original Gamblers is really different from the way it is now, which isn't totally accurate. They both still involve that you have to collect a certain number of points.
Yeah.
And then you have a gamble sequence that you have to do.
That's,
so
yeah.
It's a little bit different now. Like now you can do the gamble sequence whenever you want within the within your run.
Yeah.
And they have the whole thing of if you're come under a certain number of points, you get a bonus or a something like that, but
the time you can get a time bonus,
right? But the old gamblers was you collected points, and then there was a whistle blown at 40 seconds. I think it was for Maddie. I don't know if it was different for all dogs. And then after the whistle blew, you had to do the gamble sequence.
Yeah,
it was fun.
Yeah, it actually, if you do gamblers, well, I haven't done USDA in a while, so I don't know, but the USDA Gamblers was what the original Maydac Gamblers looked like.
Okay.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, Gamblers started, I guess, the new Gamblers, we'll call it. I think it was started in 2019. So I know I've tried it with Trace, but we didn't do very well, but that he's still a young dog. We're not doing very well in a lot of stuff, but I have tried it, so I do know what the new version is like, that's for sure.
Yeah, I haven't done it very often.
Yeah, I won't claim to be an ace at it.
Right.
I've had my challenges.
Right. Okay. Since another question that you mentioned something about, this year with COVID and all. So I'll just ask, have you guys been going to real trials, or have you been like me, not really trialing this year?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, we've gone to maybe two trials since COVID started, and they were, they were later in 2020. And one was completely outside, and the other was in a, really big barn. What we've done, we've been fortunate enough to be able to set up BT runs down where we train. So when the weather was good, we were doing those almost every weekend.
Okay.
But since December, it really hasn't worked out, to do them outside.
Right.
So, but that's really been like for me a saving grace is doing those DT runs.
Yeah, and I was thankful that our local school, one of the women that was involved with the local school was running VT, so she set up a lot of regular and touch and go. I think she did maybe one tunnelers. So I didn't get any cues with my dog Trace, but I went. But Leanne was able to get a number of cues with Belle in regular and in touch and go.
Oh, great! Yeah, cool. Yeah, that's excellent. Mate.
Yeah, it was. That was. So I agree with you. The VT at least let you still have a feel for agility during this last year, and I'm hoping that toward the end of this year in 21 that maybe things we can get back more a little bit more easily.
Yeah. I think, the clubs that are doing trials outside, I think people are feeling pretty comfortable with those, because you're outside. And I think, I mean, I know I feel safe if we're working outside. And if it's a really big indoor facility, and people are observing COVID protocol, then I feel okay with that, but I think it's been hard for a lot of people, and it's still not really the same, because a lot of places you're limited to the number of people you can have inside or, things like that. Or with the VTs, you're not part of agility. for us has always been kind of the social aspect too. So, you know, if it's just Tom and I, so it's not quite as social as it was before.
Right.
So that, you know, that's been hard. So I think we're definitely hoping that, you know, this year as more and more people get vaccinated and, you know, we start to approach that herd immunity piece that we can start to, you know, get back to doing more.
It, the other nice thing about the VTs, and it's important to point out, it was a way for us to support our favorite venue, even with the trial stuff.
Yeah, and exactly.
That was meaningful to us, and you know, a lot of the clubs, we couldn't do anything about that because there was no way to hold that. But the venue itself was, you know, hopefully was able to extend and stay alive and continue on into the future, thanks to the revenue they got from the VT rents.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right, and I would agree that was the case, that so many people were doing VTs that it did, that kept NADAC going. They were, you know, kept them financially solvent. I would think that was true. That was a true statement. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, that definitely meant a lot to us.
Yeah. Since you mentioned VTs, and it's a little bit with that, when I've gone to trials, especially, you know, I've seen you most often at the In the Zone trials. And Tom, I don't know if it was an official title, but I would say you were like the chief course builder at the In the Zone trials. So how did you get involved building courses? Because I know you build them pretty quick and you do a pretty good job, because I rarely see the judge having to tweak them too much after you build them.
That's really kind. So actually, yeah, you have to go back to the early days of In the Zone when Dwayne Bonker was a NADAC judge, and he was also, both he and Lisa ran In the Zone. And he got me involved in course design. I really, quite frankly, I have to admit it. He pretty much taught me how to do stuff. And a lot of times we'd have to get creative because, like you mentioned, at places like Woodstown or places down in Virginia, you know, again on the ocean at the Tales of, I think. Anyhow. If it gets windy and you have to make some changes, well, that you can't just delete the dog walk. You have to do something.
Right.
And, you know, he'd be busy running the trial and he'd basically say, okay, Tom, we need a touch and go with no dog walk. And I remember, okay, I've got to invent a touch and go with no dog walk. We had another one where there was a flood inside a barn. The barn, and it was, half the floor of the barn was a lake, and okay, we need these courses won't fit. We got to come up with something that looks like a regulation course. And the dog walk makes a perfectly good bridge. Luckily, none of the dogs fell off the dog walk and into the lake.
Okay.
So dealing with challenges like that and just getting the encouragement and the guidance, and working with all of these judges. I hate to start naming them, and I'll miss a few, but people like Bernie Doyle, you know, she was a great guide to this.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, turned out one of my close friends, Scott Casino, he was an exhibitor for a while, and then he was a judge in training. I felt like along the way I helped him a lot. And now I'd have to say I probably learned more from him than anybody. I love working with the guy just because he thinks about exactly what challenge a particular element of the course is supposed to present. And it's very important to him. And he's also does some really creative course design. So I love to build the stuff. I don't always love running them because they kick my butt. But I love building the kind of courses that he designs. And,
yeah, you've learned from a lot of different.
Yeah, they're really all of them were contributors. Janet Ohms, and I'm going to blank on names here, but every one of them has a perspective, and so talking to the judge was important.
Right.
They would give you what they were trying to achieve with the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. Yeah. All right. Very good. And since I asked you a question, I'll ask Pat a question. Going back a bit to champs, I know that when I've been a champs, I see you along the state raffle baskets, and I see you putting in your tickets. And the two that I've been, I know we do the we always get that early bird raffle ticket buy. So at least I think we get. I'm not. I don't know if I'm sure. I think it's 300 tickets for $100 or something. So, yep. So you go through the week and you slowly put all those tickets in there. But I know I've seen you doing the tickets. So I got to ask, over the years, how lucky have you been at the basket raffles?
I think I feel like I've been pretty lucky. I haven't won every year, but I've gotten some really nice baskets over the year. Now, some people, I know their name, like, their name gets called over and over again. They're going home with four or five baskets. I've never been quite that lucky. But that's one of the most fun things about championships is the raffle basket.
I think we went one year, we decided we wanted to get that quilt. There was a quilt made with T-shirts. From previous NADAC trials, I think we all
championships.
Yes, NADAC championships. They had made a quilt. I can't remember who made that quilt.
I don't remember.
But that was the one thing that we really really wanted that we got. It was a bunch of us that contributed to that. So yeah, I guess if you really wanted something, you could pile in on it. And it's always happy to see other people. We would take a basket out as well. We would bring.
A bunch of baskets
from Maryland, and it was always fun to see somebody hustling down the hallway with those baskets under their arms.
Yeah,
eyes as big as saucers.
Right. Yeah, and I'll say that the Maryland basket is always an appealing one that I've seen in the 2 years that I went as an observer.
It got a little competitive, by the way, because there were some folks up in New England that started putting out some pretty crazy great baskets. I have to give them a nod. So
yeah, it was always that would be like, okay, let's look at how many tickets are in each bag, and we got to make sure we get a lot of tickets in the bag in our bag.
Now I'm not sure if I heard or not. Did you actually win the quilted quilt with all the T-shirts?
Yes,
you did. And oh wow, so how many tickets did you put in there? A lot, I take it.
Many,
because there were like. There were half a dozen of us that put all our tickets in that bag.
Oh yeah.
And what we ended up doing is that we gave it to Debbie Hutchinson.
Okay. Yeah.
She was the reason we were all there.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. That sounded like it was a unique thing, and I'll say that in 2019. Leanne was able to snag, I believe it was the Missouri one. She got the Missouri basket. And really, there's so much stuff, and this was one where it was inside a dog crate. Sometimes you don't even know what all you got. And like she won it, and we bring it back to the stall, and we're looking through it, and there's lots of barbecue sauce and good wines and beer. And it was just surprising the amount of stuff that was in that crate.
Yeah.
I think I won the Massachusetts basket that year. I know I won the last time we won, I won the Massachusetts basket. So it would have been 2019. And it is.
And it's so much
fun because, you know, it's like you keep on finding things and it's like, oh my God, I can't believe this. And then the biggest challenge then is how do you get it?
How am I going to get all this back in the car?
Yeah, you end up asking your friends to take stuff for you. But it's really fun because I think people are very, very, people coming from all the different state areas are really generous and
they do a good job of representing. So you'll see some novelties that are particular to that state.
Yeah.
Like there's a bunch of New England things in the New England basket. Mm-hmm. That was fun. You know?
Yeah.
That was clever.
Right. Yeah, I agree. That just walking along those basket lines and looking and dreaming of the ones you might win, it's fun. And that's why I wanted to bring it up, because I do remember seeing you going along that line a bit.
Yeah, we threw away all the Patriots stuff, but the other stuff
okay. Now, this podcast will be released on February 17th, so it's going to be after the Super Bowl. We're recording this the day before the Super Bowl, but since you mentioned a football team, I'm going to ask, who do you like in the Super Bowl this year?
No, we'd really like the Ravens in the Super Bowl, but that right. didn't happen. You know what? I just think it's the changing of the guard, and we'll see whether the 45-year-old can beat the 25-year-old. I'm just going to sit back and eat some chicken wings and drink an IPA and watch the fireworks.
I think it's going to be a really good game.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I hope too. I hope it's a good game, but I think I will be pulling for Kansas City, but because I find it hard to root for Tom Brady. But if he wins, if he wins, I'm okay with it because he really is a very good quarterback.
Yeah, he is. That I is mean, true. You consider how long he's been playing and how many Super Bowls he's won.
He's got a lot of jewelry.
Yep.
Right. So I'm just going to go back a little bit to the couple theme though, and you can answer this or you can't. But how did you two actually meet? So apparently you met before you did agility. So how did you two meet?
I'll let Pat tell this story.
It was a long, long time ago. Anyway, we met at a Halloween party, and it was just made to be because I had gone to the party dressed as a hooker, and Tom had gone to the party dressed as a pimp. I mean, it was meant to be.
Yes, I have a May arrangement.
And it was quite a few years before we had dogs.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So you actually met at a Halloween party, and a costume. Yeah. Well, a lot of Halloween parties are costume parties, yeah. Of course. That's, if you're going to dress up, it's Halloween.
Yeah, that was it.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. And I'll throw this as a compliment, not anything to do with that story of how you met, but often, Pat, I would say you have a very tasteful amount of bling when I see you at agility trials.
Yes,
yes. You know, as people have heard me say, if you can't be sharp, be shiny.
Okay. So it's part of the deal when you go to the agility trial.
Yeah. Right, right.
Lots of bling, and every item of clothing and shoes is color coordinated, so it's the whole deal.
Right. Yes. Yeah. You're very functional. Yeah. Everything you, when I've ever seen your trials, very functional. You can move freely and you run around that course with your dog, but you also look very coordinated.
Well, thank you. I try.
You're very observant.
Yeah. You're not the slouch that comes along like me. I just wear whatever T-shirt I have on that day or whatever, and I'm off to the trial.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I do. I hope maybe I get to see you sometime in 2021. I hope that Springfield, Ohio. The champs happen. It's October, so I think there is a chance that we might be able to do that.
Yeah, I'm really hoping for that also. Yeah. And, you know, it's later, I mean, it's in the beginning of October, so, you know, since it's, like, in the fall rather than in the spring, I think I'm hoping there's a better chance that it will be able to happen.
Yes, me too, because vaccines are coming out. I know it's hard to get a vaccine and, you know, not everybody's eligible yet. It depends. I know it's very variable by state, but I think by then everybody who wants to be vaccinated probably can be by that fall period. So
yeah.
I would really hope that we might be able to have the championships this year.
Yeah, definitely.
And, I'm hoping that some of the outside, I'm hoping I can go to some of the outside trials. And I know Lisa is gonna, you know, right now she's on for the In the Zone trial down in South Jersey in May. So I'm hoping maybe I can get to that one this year. I don't know how my dog's gonna be because, you know, it's, he was an intro in 2019, and now haven't been trialing with him at a real trial. So I just hope he can have some focus when we. I mean, I go to class, but going to class is not the same as going to that actual real trial environment.
No, it's not. It's definitely not. I think we're going to see a lot of dogs kind of trying to catch up. You know, just because they haven't been exposed to trial. So it's going to be all, it's, for many dogs, it'll be a new experience for them.
I definitely agree with you. I'm glad I've been able to at least, you know, I pretty much still have been training. I go to class. I kind of have a private session. My sister and I go together to our agility school, and we run, you know, because it's an inside facility, and so we kind of have only a half hour class with the instructor, and then there's a class that comes after us where I think there's four people in the hour, because, you know, everything with COVID, you know, you have to reduce down the number of people and stuff. So we kick off the day with the instructor, and it's just Leanne and me and our two beagles. So we've been glad that we've been able to do that. But I know it's not the same as being able to go to trials and work on things there.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. It's not the same.
It never is.
You know, even VTs aren't the same because, you know, you don't have the other, generally, you don't have, like, the other exhibitors and dogs. And it's, you know, there's really nothing that I can think of that really, you know, imitates that trial experience.
Yeah. So that first trial back, whatever they give us, that's what they got.
Oh, yeah.
we just have to be prepared to live with what they have.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yes, I would. All right. So I think we've talked about your dogs. We've talked about how you started. We talked about how you guys met. Part of the reason Margaret had suggested this, you know, and like I said, when I think of a couple, I definitely think of you guys because it's rare. I don't think, you know, in the circle of trials that I go to, I can't think of anybody else other than, like I said, Pat and Carol Daggett, but they're not always, you know, sometimes they're divided up between what they're, you know, sometimes one of them's a judge or something. I can't think of anybody else off the top of my head. Locally here in New Jersey, there's Daniel and Roger Verneau, but Roger's just coming up with his dog. I don't know that he's really gone to trials yet. So we might have another couple that might be an agility couple.
That's great.
Yeah. But, and you may have seen Danielle down and in the zone. She ran Australian cattle dog, Holly. And now Roger's also gotten, he got a puppy recently, but I mean, it's old now, it's, you know, it's old enough to compete now. And that's Luca. So Luca and Holly, they may, if you see Australian cattle dogs, they might be at a trial someday in the future.
Have you been at trials where Scott Cassino and Diana Diedrich are?
You know, I know Scott Cassino more as a judge, so I guess I probably have been, but I know Scott, and I would recognize him running his dog, but I don't know about his wife or significant other.
Yeah. And if he was judging, because, you know, before COVID, for the most part, I think judges, like, I can't remember if judges were allowed to judge their spouse.
I can't remember.
He might have been judging and Di wasn't there.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's gotten loosened up. Definitely during COVID it's been loosened up. I think it might have been loosening up a little bit back in 2019. Because I do remember there was a time, or although maybe it was some sort of special dispensation, I don't know. I do remember there was at least one trial where I saw, you know, one of the Daggetts as judge and the other one was running.
There's a few couples in our area, and of course, can't overlook. You know, there are a number of gay couples that are competing in agility.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
right down in the Maryland area. Okay.
Yeah,
Yeah. And the other couple I think of too, but they're not, they more host trials up in Vermont. You have, yeah, I'm blanking. Oh. Aaron and Corey, Vita.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't see them at trials as much, but they're often running a trial that I'm attending. So.
Right. Yeah. We love their Dummerston trial. I hope they do that this year.
Yeah, I know they didn't do any trials last year. I'm hoping maybe toward the end of the year, maybe, because they used to have a big one, I think, in August, and maybe in August they could have it.
Right, but that's the one that we always went to.
Yeah, I like that Vermont area. My sister and I would always try to tie a little time up there. I think I've mentioned it in the past, like we would go visiting covered bridges and things. So we like that Vermont location a lot.
Yeah,
we do too. Yeah. All right. Very good. Well, is there anything else you want to share? Because we're pretty close to the hour mark, and I do thank you for, being the couple that I chose, and Margaret had suggested you, and I thought it was an excellent idea. And in honor of this month of February, Valentine's Day, it all works out perfectly.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, thank you for having us. We really appreciate it. We really enjoy your podcast.
Yeah.
And we really enjoyed having the opportunity to talk with you this afternoon.
And we look forward to seeing you. If you can get out at the May trial, we hope you can. And say hey to Margaret for us, because we think finally of her, too, and all our other friends up in New Jersey.
Yeah, and say hi to Leanne for us,
yeah,
too.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's easy to do. I definitely will give her your greetings.
Thanks.
All right, then. Well, I thank you once again for being on the podcast, and I hope to see you down the road at a real trial.
Same here.
All right.
Take care. Bye-bye.
And I'm back with a final comment. I want to thank Pat and Tom for being my guests. I learned a lot about them and a bit about NADAC history from them. If you do agility with your partner, significant other, or spouse, and you'd like to be a guest, well, I should say guests, on a future episode of this podcast, please get in touch with me by emailing offcourse@optimum.net. You can always find that email in the show details of each and every episode. If you are going to an actual trial or you're doing some videotaped runs, I wish you happy trialing.